Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends.
Brian Brushwood.
Yeah, hello.
And Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody. That's me.
Hey, gentlemen, I've got news for you.
What news? Whoa, what ho, sir? News, you say?
Hey, what did a North Carolina man say and have footage of was watching him in the woods?
All right, so this is North Carolina, Brian. All right, so keep that in mind. It's a man, not a woman, and there are a wooded area commonly referred to as the woods.
Yes, I'm gonna say a self-pleasuring transient person is what he saw staring at him in the woods.
So Brian's going with Fiddlin' Hobo. and I am going to say that it was none other than Bigfoot himself.
Oh, even though Bigfoot is supposed to have started up in Washington, how does he get all the way down there?
He's got a summer home, Brian.
Of course he does. He summers.
Yeah, no, he summers in the Outer Banks.
So Justin says Bigfoot. Brian says hobo. The two are not mutually exclusive. We'll point that out.
they both are very hairy. They both are not keen on getting spotted.
Although I will say that my Bigfoot is non-fiddling. Brian has fiddling hobo. Mine is non-fiddling.
Bryce?
I looked this up, so I know the answer, but we have a little...
It's spiders.
We have a key
it's
visual
thousands
here.
And thousands of spiders. We got an image. Wait, is that... It looks like an ape. No.
What?
Okay. So, depending on how you squint, it looks like maybe a hunched over person in black with a face that twitches or moves. But when I look at it again, it begins to look like a monkey holding on to a tree, and it's adjusting its feet.
To be totally honest, it would just be a splotch if it didn't move in a manner that makes you think that that's an arm, right?
Yeah. Although it looks much smaller than I had anticipated. I just instantly went to a man-sized creature, which is why I went to with a man.
Well, notice
man-sized.
Notice standing to the next to the next.
Oh.
Let's see here. I'm gonna pop this up so Brian can see it.
Once you picture it as a creature holding onto a tree, it does look like just a single leg reaching down.
Yeah, that's the...
Something standing to the right.
I'm never good with these. Like, these are all always people who are better at looking at things than I am, man.
this is like we have to find all the 12 hidden Bible verses in the back of the Chick-fil-A.
Exactly. Like Justin, your assessment, like, man, people are better at looking at stuff than me. Even in translation, people are better at making stuff up in their head than what they're looking at. I mean, we would make the worst ghost hunter show in the world. Bump, bump. What's that? Oh, it's the pipes expanding. No, guys. No, it's not the pipes.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, the house is settling. No, no.
Well, it was awfully hot today, and now it's cooling off.
I feel a cold spot. Like, yeah, you just walk past a window.
Did we talk about this? One of the martial arts, there's a lot of, you know, pseudoscience in the martial arts. And there was one guy who would have everybody meditate at one particular time of the day. And they said that they could feel the energy and then you would hear the beams and rafters cracking and shaving. And of course, the answer was because he always made sure that they meditated at around 3 p.m. when the sun was beating down the hardest and everything would creak and expand.
Oh, wow. I know we've told the story on other stuff, but I don't know, Andrew, if I've told you, one of the last times that I went to go down and visit Brian, I stayed at the compound, then yet unfinished, compared to the level that it's at now. It was very much just a dilapidated hobo domicile, of which I was the hobo. And, you know, Andrew and I, we've talked long about, you know, no matter how rational you are, there's always, if you hear bumps and creaks in the middle of the night, like you are just going, your mind's going to go to a weird place. And at that point, there's all this exposed stuff. The house is right on a road, so you hear literally everything. And because it's kind of out in the country, it's quiet, so you can hear a car coming from way, way, way down the road. But I'm trying to keep control. I'm trying to make sure. I'm just reminding myself, none of this is a murderer. None of this is a murderer. That click I just heard definitely wasn't the door opening. There's definitely not a murderer because I'm very far away from any lights. And I eventually drift off to sleep with that, only to wake up to the silhouette of a large bald man.
Now, right, picture Kingpin. Man, picture looking up and there's Kingpin staring down at you.
just looking, opening the door and just looking down at me. And I'm like, this isn't real. This is definitely a dream. Like, this is absolutely. And it's one of those moments that you know was an actual half second, but it feels like a week in my brain as it tries to, you know, it's like, oh my, do I need to jump up? Also, like, I'm in my underwear. Like, is this how I die? It was just Brian's brother bringing me breakfast tacos.
And then he stabbed you.
And then he stabbed me. Yeah. But anyway, but yes. All right. So here, let's go ahead and get back to what this crazy creature is in the North Carolina woodland. Because I don't know what the hell it is. It just sort of looks like a splotch.
If I was going to
be a thing,
it might be a gray squirrel repositioning its back leg. That's my best guess.
But if what about your worst guess?
Oh, and my worst guess is that it is a prehensile nose on an alien creature wearing a nun's habit, which, by the way, tracks. Look at that through that lens. So there's a creature wearing a nun's habit with a prehensile nose that it reaches over to touch the tree.
Just because as the common ritual.
It looks a bit like, which Miyazaki movie is it?
Spirited Away?
Yeah, Spirited Away.
The faceless things?
Yeah.
We've got a report here from WCNC, NBC in North Carolina. Here we go.
Took the phone out, gazed the hill, kept looking. He's still up here.
Not just one, he says three different Bigfoot stared at him from the hill. This is just a snippet of 10 minutes of video Teague says he recorded.
He's moving.
Just describe to me that moment, just emotionally, just...
Like a giddy school kid. This nervous heart beating, it was crazy.
He's a member of the Catawba Valley Bigfoot Research Club. McDowell County is considered a hotspot for these sightings, though the path leading to this larger-than-life creature often goes cold. Scientists say there's a logical reason for this. There's no evidence Bigfoot exists. Teague disagrees.
They're real. They're Bigfoot there. Thing.
As does Vicky Cook.
Was it went in front of my camera?
Earlier this summer, she shared this grainy video taken outside her Cleveland County home.
Oh, screamed. I didn't know what it was, but that thing was tall.
With big feet to boot, both Cook and Teague took casts of the creature's feet.
There's probably a lot more evidence than people realize.
Some will scoff, but others, like Cook, Teague, and even his granddaughter,
he's moving.
Believe. In Catawba County, I'm Brandon Goldner, NBC Charlotte.
Oh my God, that's so good. That dude personified. I listened to Pedulette was on the Joe Rogan program, and they were talking about his, you know, moon hoax landing phase, and how he kind of gave up on a lot of that when he did his show Joe Rogan Questions Everything. And specifically on the subject of Bigfoot, he at some point realized, like, man, this is just an excuse for a bunch of white people to go hang out and camp and have a good time in the woods. And he said the only thing less likely to be found than Bigfoot is a black person looking for Bigfoot.
Yeah, no, that certainly seems like a cultural phenomenon, Bigfoot hunting.
It's funny, too, because like every time we see the reports of that, almost predictably, it's like the same person's cast. You know, guy in trucker hat, facial hair, turns out believes in Bigfoot, you know, like, and it's funny because, like, man who's a member of Bigfoot Society sees a very amorphous thing and describes as Bigfoot. It could be like, man, and hey, people wearing black ponchos in the woods society has footage of somebody wearing a black poncho in the woods.
Oh my! Because just for the audio listeners, we started playing that, and first, just an amazing voice. I always television news, specifically local television news, just the best at gathering America's beautiful quilt of voices. But the guy, when they go to the shot of him, not just describing doing his like double rainbow all the way narration over the original clip, you realize that he is wearing a Bigfoot hat and a Bigfoot charm. And you're like, wow, like, was he really so moved by seeing Bigfoot in the woods that he went and got a hat charm? Like,
in the background, dolphins. He's got.
So now I got a dolphin tattoo.
But no, he's in the society of finding Bigfoot.
Yeah, he definitely has in the background signs that say, warning, Bigfoot crossing, and I believe in Bigfoot.
Although it does look kind of like the Insane Clown Posse Hatchet Man. It kind of has a little bit of a
juggalo vibe. Could be some crossover there.
So, you know, this is the importance of being able to capture things on video, using cameras and stuff. Do either of you guys use, like, Nest cams or Wyze cameras or anything like that?
I do, now that I got a place that I intend to invite people over and equipment mm-hmm. that I store there. Yeah. That place is going to be locked down like Fort Knox.
Yeah, I use those because they're cheap. They're super cheap to keep time. You know, they remember, you know, you look at a $20 for a camera, and it's a good idea. And, you know, a big one now has been the doorbell cameras. And we talked about how some of them captured, you know, TV Man.
Yes.
What would be an argument against one of those cameras?
Well, I know the big security risk is that a lot of them, if you are not careful about it, they are broadcast to you online, so you can see it from your phone. Oftentimes they do it on insecure IPs, and so there are entire sites where you can just scroll through the publicly available broadcasts, and some of them are really personal stuff, like obviously like for kid cams or... I remember there was one that famously went around that was just a grow house. Dude's entire grow operation just being streamed live on the internet.
There was a minor plot point in my new book, Dark Pattern, by the way.
Hey!
Dark Pattern? Is that another book in the Theo Cray series?
New Theo Cray book.
Awesome. Yeah, there was a bit of a flap for Amazon because they were hosting. If you had a developer code, if you had developer privileges, then you had access, as long as you knew someone's email, you had access to all of their live feed cameras, just all unencrypted, all there.
Yep. Which is bad. So that's one part. And also, there's the whole idea of maybe sometimes you don't want to know.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to show some video footage coming up next, and it's the category of, like, I didn't need to see that. Suggestions?
Oh, geez, of what we're about to see.
We're just looking at a Ring camera right under the silver handle. So it's kind of pointed toward the house, the garage. Mm-hmm. There's a white Jeep in the driveway there.
Any guesses?
I think it's going to be a horrific spider crawls right over the camera.
Spider, Justin.
I think it's gonna be a fiddling hobo.
All right, let's click play.
Oh my God, it's a snake! Ah! Well, why was I thinking of spiders? It's so had to be a snake.
Big old snake.
Oh,
it's all up on the handle. It's coming down from the handle, so it's already like up on the door above the handle.
It almost understands the nature of the fisheye lens. Like
we're still watching the snake slip
it's
past.
Still going. It's like you ever have to wait for a train and you just can't believe that it's still going.
It's still more.
Oh my God!
It's so good. I think I mean, just about tapering off.
That has to be.
Is it?
That has to be like a four foot snake.
That is 48 unbroken seconds, dear listeners, of nothing but a snake slithering directly toward a fisheye lens.
Wow. So
it looks even bigger as it goes by.
Dude, that's crazy.
There's, at the bottom, there's a, I don't know how we missed this. It could have been worse, says the article. Earlier this year, a doorbell camera captured a snake biting a man in the face.
What?
So apparently the snake was on the porch light when Jarrell Haywood approached the door. And then this is the footage of the man. He looks over. Oh,
oh my God! No, no, no! Oh,
Jarrell! Bit him
right above his eye! Oh my God.
I love how he drops immediately into like an Aikido stance. Like he's ready to punch someone after it nails him. He immediately spreads his legs apart, drops down to get a wide, solid stance.
I mean, just if you go back, I just want to just understand the faces of emotion that pass over poor Jarrell. Because, like, pause it here. He's just like, Matt, Monday, right? Like, this is just work
Are those kids playing on them sprinklers again?
Yeah. Another day in paradise, and paradise is in air quotes, right? Like, that's like his face right there. And then go forward. Boom. That's like, did something drop on me? Like, is there maybe some like
a bug?
Yeah, somebody playing. Yeah, is it like a large bug or something? A big cicada that just hit? This is just mild annoyance. Then he realizes this is shock and appall. He is now in total free fall. His world has fallen around from under him. And then it's fear. It's just absolute terror as he covers his head and drops into, as Brian mentioned, his Aikido stance.
A little bit of indignance as well. It's like that moment in Fight Club where he's like, oh, you hit me in the ear. Yeah. And he's like, what?
He went to the hospital. Turned out it wasn't venomous, and his response was, "No stitches, thankfully, but they cleaned me up pretty good. I am on antibiotics." Who wants to live in a world where that can just happen?
I mean, some of us want it so bad we bought 7 acres of it so that we can be closer to that opportunity.
In a place where you're expecting this to happen, this guy's in a neighborhood. He gets bit by something in a. I guess that's the difference. It's like if I go to Australia and I get bit by a snake, hey, I went to Australia. You know, if I'm like, oh, I'm going to go knock on, you know, Brian's, you know, your house, not in the boondocks. Like, hey, Brian, you want to.
Dude, that is. I mean, I can't even imagine. I guess that snake was just chilling out there above the.
On the door, just waiting. Light.
Yeah, way too many snakes around doors trying to figure out, I'm going to get in.
Yeah, right? Well, I'll tell you what, you can get in on the action when you go on over to patreon.com/weirdthings. Again, patreon.com/weirdthings is where you need to go. You can support our show here. Keep us rocking and rolling throughout the year, making sure that we bring you the top news of the weird podcast. Science, culture, all the other stuff. So simple, folks. Head on over there, patreon.com/weirdthings.
So some scientists have decided to get to the bottom of this Loch Ness monster thing.
Oh, finally. Finally.
You know, I like to imagine whenever any kind of group of scientists gets together, you know, they're like, here's my new paper on muon decay. And like, oh, that's great. And there's my thing on my telly. Yeah, but you know... Guys, we really got to get to the bottom of this Loch Ness monster thing. You know, some cancer research conference. We found some very promise. I'm sorry. I'm going to stop my presentation because I don't think it's right that we go on because we haven't gotten to the bottom of this Loch Ness monster thing.
Yeah.
Well, guess what?
They're doing it.
Yep.
Neil
Gemmell from the University of Otago in New Zealand, they had a project where what they decided to do was go to Scotland. Collect, I guess, you know, doing, they can do this thing where you do like, you get a big spectrum of like, just samples from the water and you just see what DNA is in there. What do you find in there? Guess what they found? Eel DNA. Lots of eel DNA, which led forward to the headline, could be a giant eel or a lot of small eels.
Certainly, like, anytime you see, like, bubbling water out of the corner of your eye, you're convinced, like, oh, my God, did I just miss it? Did it just pop up? And then you see a splash that's too big. That feels like that could be a school of eels. I don't know if they do that or maybe a mating knot or something. But a giant eel would create that that stereotypical in and out of the water sea serpent shape, I would imagine.
Yeah, so would a pod of seals.
Oh yeah, all moving at the same time.
Yeah, but and that was things like hell, it could be a giant eel or a lot of small eels. What are we going to bet on there?
Probably a lot of small eels.
Yes.
I would say it. Although a gigantic eel, far cooler, more realistic, a big old pot of them.
Yeah. So anyhow, but that's kind of a neat example of, you know, some of the things we can do today to, you know, test for these things, to look for stuff and kind of kill a lot of belief in what's going on. You know, like, oh, we think this thing would be real. No, we tested the DNA. It's bear.
Well, and you know what's funny is as a lot of these older, you know, monster mysteries sort of wither on the vine, as it's harder and harder to intentionally fake stuff and we our standards of evidence get higher and higher, it does feel like we're seeing a lot of other mysteries open up. You know, everything from these creepypasta stories, or we're entering a phase where we're not even going to believe video evidence in a world of deepfakes or whatever. It's like we're seeing the sunset on that beautiful time that we were able to say, "Show me the video," and that was enough proof. And soon it's like, even if you show me the video, I don't know that I could believe it.
Well, and that brings us to the next story here, which is it came out a week ago. There was a little hazy. Now there's been more details. Here's the story about a businessman gets a call on the phone, and it's like his boss is like, "Hey, we need to transfer, you know, 500,000 euros right away. Blah blah blah. We got to get this done. There's the account. Do this. Da da da." I'm like, "Oh, this is unusual. Yeah, but we got to go do it." I'm like, "Okay, transferring the funds. Da 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 da." Later on. "Hey, yeah, I transferred the funds," called the boss. "Like, what funds?" "Well, you called me. You told me to transfer the funds." "I never called you." Dun, dun, dun. What may be the first example of a deep fake voice crime.
Oh, wow. God. Wow. So how does it assemble it? Is that that software that, like does it change it live? Or
so what... you can do is we're not quite sure what they're using, but so a while ago Adobe showed off this thing called Voco, which was going to be their, like, you know, way to transcribe text into the voice pattern of somebody else. Adobe stalled on it partially because they were afraid of the legal implications of this, because it was very powerful technology, and you know, whether right or wrong, Adobe's like, "Hey," and the assumption was Adobe's like, "We're not sure if we want to be in the center of this problem." Because this being able to simulate people's voices is very, very powerful tech. Well, that hadn't stopped other researchers continuing this line of research. And so there's some open source stuff. There's, you know, software you can download on GitHub that takes a considerable amount of time. You have to train it on a particular voice right now. Although in the last month or so, there's been some new developments of being able to use very short voice examples. That is out of the bag now. It's out of the bag. That is out there right now, is using this tech. So it wasn't Adobe's, but it was other similar idea of basically train a neural network on one, how to turn text into speech. And then you can go in and now you can use a pre-trained network and then quickly train it on somebody else's voice.
So that's crazy. And even when you think about how different people sound on the phone, how much allowance that you'll give to, like, "Oh, that didn't really sound like you, but I guess if you're talking to me about stuff that contextually you would know about, I'll just take your word for it." That's insane. Although it was going to happen at some point, right? Yeah.
We knew this was going to happen. The problem and thing I try to articulate to people when we talk about deep fake is people go, "Well, we've lived in a world of Photoshop." Like, yes. We lived in a world of Photoshop, and we're talking about on a mass level. We don't live in a world where your average scammer trying to scam you through email will spend 20 minutes making a fake of you in Photoshop with friends. That's what we're getting in. We're getting into the world where computers could do that now, and computers could send me photos of us hanging out, never having hung out, or photos could find photos of, look up your name, look up your friends, and then computer generate some photo of your friend doing something they never did. Or in this case, voices could say, "Hey, look at all these guys in these podcasts. We can do speaker identification and figure out the different speakers." The computing power now, what AI can do is it can do it at a scale we never thought of before. You know, it's one thing when one person's trying to do this, which it made sense here, but when a neural network, you know, on a bunch of, you know, zombie computers can go do this at mass, we've never encountered that, and that's going to be different.
That is the scary part. It actually reminds me of, you know, the head of Twitter got hacked about a week ago. And the way that they did it is a more common thing that's happening now, which is SIM swapping. So it's not even like you're falling for anything. They're literally just either paying somebody at the phone company, or they're able to convince the phone company that they need to swap the SIM on this account. And so now all the two-factor codes are going to the scammer's phone, and that's how we got hacked. And it's like, you know, they're doing it fairly rudimentarily. Now it's like, if you can even, you know, even being able to manufacture somebody's voice, it's just yet another layer of authenticity.
So I think that a solution is going to be, you're going to, one, only start to trust communications that come from certain channels. Tomorrow's Apple's announcement. Apple's coming out with a new iPhone. And I think that's going to, we're going to see Apple and Google and Facebook start to come up with, like, this is a secure channel. If you get a call from Justin and it's not through iMessage, it may not be Justin. And we're going to live in that world.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be the role, is we're going to start paying these companies, like, you better guarantee me that I'm talking to the person at the other end is who I think I'm talking to.
And that technology will bear the burden of that. Like,
yeah,
we will create new secure certificates so we can prove more so that this is exactly who you think it is.
Do you think, given, and this is speculation that will be old news by the time most people listen to this, but given the fact that this is just another iterative release of the iPhone, and that there's not expected to be any truly big leaps, do you think that we're going to see security as kind of a front and center topic?
I mean, that's certainly been... That has been a point for them for years now, especially as their rivals primarily are the Apples, or sorry, the Facebooks and Googles of the world, where their one value proposition is, we're not trying, like, you are already paying us $1,000 plus for this tech. We don't want to then further make money on you in terms of data harvesting.
Well, one, I you mean three cameras isn't innovative enough, Brian? well, here's the problem. So a few days ago, Google releases this press release saying, hey, we found this hack that was, like, in a area that was exploiting, you know, iPhones, you know, and was able, like, you know, an instant hack to exploit iPhones, blah, 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 which is true. There was this, like, these sites that were able to quickly hack into and make it exploit iPhones without the user having to click anything or do anything. Like, this was a very big deal. You dig deeper and you find out Apple responds that yes, it affected Android phones too, which Google did not make a big deal. Google wanted to say iPhone, this, it affected Android phones, blah, 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 this and other phones. And it was like, affected everybody. But what Apple didn't point out was, this was done by the Chinese government more than likely, and it was used to target their Muslim population. And it was, you know, Apple's next biggest market, or biggest market for the App Store. That country was actively targeting people and targeting Android users and this. And that's a big problem, where your big security nightmare isn't just, you know, some people in some hack, you know, some Russian kids with hacking programs.
Yeah.
It's state actors developing these exploits. In this case, it's a nation that Apple's heavily invested with and partnered with, that they wouldn't even mention. Apple wouldn't even mention it in the press release.
Yeah, that seems like a delicate balance. Like when you're dealing with a major superpower, you just want to say, like, hey, man, I'm just here for the customers. Customers, we're doing our best to keep you safe. End of sentence.
Oh, also, it's not just the customers. It's also their supply line. Like, there is a lot invested in making sure that the government of China is A-okay with Apple compute.
So yeah, I'd like to think that I think that we're going to want to have secure lines of communication to know that the person on the other is, one, to make sure that it's not being hacked. Two is to make sure the person on the other end is who I think, and that's going to see those trusted channels are going to becoming, you know, improve, are going to become, you know, more in demand, you know, and because the problem you have is, like, you get a call right now. You can phone. You can. I've done this before. You can spoof phone numbers. You can make it look like it's coming from anybody. And you know somebody, and that's what they could do in that case of the deep fake, is they could spoof who the phone call's coming from, and you hear that voice. Why wouldn't you think it was so and so? Why wouldn't you? Because we're not prepared for that.
No, I mean, I would think.
Yeah.
You know, I might find it weird that Bryce was asking for $200,000, but I would certainly do my best to give it to him.
I only do that those calls on Fridays. So
yeah. So, do you want to talk a little about expectations? Or do we want to do those after things?
For the iPhone?
We're talking the Dreamcast anniversary, all that.
Yeah.
I mean, on the iPhone, I mean, okay, three cameras. Everybody's freaking out about how ugly that is. I don't think it's all that ugly, to be honest. Three cameras is a pretty good way to get effectively a gigantic camera. You know, just like a whole array of telescopes is a pretty good way to create one giant telescope. So the more of those cameras, I mean, you can cover the whole back of it in there and get like an extraordinary 8K image or something.
We get one of those. Do you remember the Amazon phones that had the four cameras on the front, and that's how it did 3D detection?
Oh, wow.
It was bad.
Yeah.
But the idea is there.
Oh, I had a thought. Maybe we passed this line a long time ago, but since the iPhone, the very first iPhone launched, I would love to go back and figure out what is the most powerful computer you could buy for desktop computers on the day that came out, and to figure out if we've already crossed that line where the new iPhones are better than the very best computers at the top of the market.
Oh, yeah. Like even an iPhone is more powerful than like a couple-year-old MacBook, or even in some ways a current MacBook in certain processes. Like, and I mean, it's crazy in certain areas how much incredibly powerful they are.
I mean, like, I wonder if and then it gets into like how many multiple arrays. And this isn't all that long ago. This is what, 10 years and change. That's astonishing.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, that it shows you when you start making billions of these devices, you know, and these chips and what happens. And, you know, and it's like as far as and it's the efficiency really comes down to, you think of like, it's not like a current computer is more powerful than a phone. Let me make that clear. But as far as efficiency per like kilowatt used to process, phone efficiency is like just crazy powerful how efficient it is. And, you know, they're more powerful than, you know, several year old. You know, you look at what you're able to do now on an iPhone as far as video processing real time. And you know, Android phones, all of this, like, you know, Google Android, they have that night vision, that feature that it like increases like your ability at night to see. And that's a neural network. You know, that's artificial intelligence going in there and saying, well, you know, I'm doing this math because it's insane. So a lot of the innovations are ones we don't see them on the surface, but underneath, you know, and I can speak more about iPhone development. You know, one of the big things is there's a mini chip inside of the iPhone that basically runs a lot of systems so the bigger chip can power down, you know, and that's kind of an interesting innovation. The idea that there's a separate sort of computer in there that says, well, I'll run all these other ones, all these other things like your face identification, et cetera. And then you power down, there's that. There's so much stuff happens under the screen that we don't realize, like, oh, they shifted the way this is done from this processor to this. They developed this whole new processor for handling this. The AR, I keep talking about augmented reality is a big bet that Apple plans on making. You look at the computations that go in when you pull out your phone and it's mapping things in three-dimensional space and you move your phone around and the thing stays still. It's insane. And, you know, what they're doing, you know, I think unfortunately or whatever, we're spending way too much time on how to make better photos, and because that maybe not way too much, but
that's what sells, right? Like that has been the killer feature, until we find a new killer feature.
I agree, and I think that's I'm excited about, you know, because as Brian points out, like we're gonna new phones tomorrow, and we're gonna extra camera, which I think it's like I agree with you. Like I think like yeah, it'll make better photos. I like the fact better photos, but yeah, you want that. What's next? You know, what's going to be really cool? What would you like?
Battery. This is the first time we talked about this. This is the first time that I sat out a generation, and you could see that degradation of a 2-year-old battery. And so now it's like I can't even make it a full day. And it's like, I remember these days. And
Mac Rumors says big batteries are coming, or physically larger batteries could be in the next phones.
By the way, a lot of times you can get dramatically better battery life by a clean install. Like that is one thing that I've noticed with iOS across the board is that, especially as it updates newer versions, like it tends to just have this big gigantic pull on the battery. And if you just install, like, especially now that so much of your stuff is like just re-downloadable on the internet, like if you have 6 hours, like you could literally just wipe your phone, clean install of the OS, and then log back in through the App Store, and it'll just repopulate everything on your phone from scratch. You'll have to re-sign into stuff and everything, but I've done that a few times, and battery immediately gets like 3 times better.
Yeah, I do that every couple of phones, instead of pulling from the iCloud backup, start over. And now that they added the LastPass and the password manager integration stuff a few years back, so that process is way smoother. Like,
now, if you do it that way, don't you lose all of your text conversations back to the previous phone?
If they're on iCloud, you would not. If they're iMessages, you would not lose them.
Right.
I guess you would lose the green bubble text SMSs.
Yeah.
So that would be something that you might lose some of. Yeah.
That's something that I've never thought of. I wouldn't, like, of course, until I went looking for a text message that I remembered from 6 months ago, I'd be like, who needs these?
You're like, oh, wait.
But, you know, your photos, you know, get backed up, and you know, most of the app stuff is, you know, is offloaded or is stuff that you can re-download. It's, yeah, I don't know. Every couple of years I do it with the phone.
To Andrew's point, I don't know what I really want. I don't know hardware-wise what I want. I want an exciting world around AR. I want an exciting development that kind of continues to push. Like, what is the next app thing? Actually, no, you want to know what I really want the most? I really want a brand new redesign of iOS. I feel like what we have now in terms of a user interface is it feels dated to me in a way that I would like a different way to interact with my phone. What that is, I don't know. But then again, I'm not Apple.
I think a big push was going to be, you know, their for voice interaction. And I think that Siri has been a disappointment for what we wanted in that.
Yes.
Well, I think that it does the Apple way of doing that, and I think that I don't use it anywhere near as much as, you know, I should according to the Apple commercials.
I want Siri to play nice with Spotify. Makes me so mad that I ask for a song and she's like, no,
it's not in your library. Exist.
Yeah. And I'm like, screw you. There's like the Amazon device is much better with that.
There are even little things with Siri, like if I have my AirPods in and I can't see my phone, but I get a notification, I want it to tell me what the notification is. And so I'll go, hey, Siri, what was that? And it'll go, I don't know what you mean. And so you have to say, hey, Siri, read notifications. And it's like little like simple things like that that have to be verbose that are
It seems like you could just say, you know, let's say you're wearing your AirPods or whatever, and you know you're within 30 feet of your phone because, you know, they're connected. You don't know where your phone is. It's like, I would love to be able to say, like, hey, where are you? And then just – and have the phone just go like, bong, 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 I'm over here.
You might be able to do that.
Yeah?
Hey, I think you –
I think you could.
I mean, look, let's take
– Hey, Siri, where are you?
Well –
Well, all right, that doesn't count. That's a sassy answer.
Actually, I have my AirPods. I'll field test this while we're...
Okay. Live experimentation only.
So let's say that right now, you know, your co-heavyweight champions in terms of voice assistant are with Google and Amazon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Siri has, despite being ahead of the game, was there several years before, has failed to keep pace with these other two voice assistants. And yet, Siri is in a place where we really, really like it. We like it in our ears and on our phone. If we're going to say that the gold standard is like her, right? A voice assistant so good you want to have sex with it and fall in love with it. Like, I just think we're so far away. And even to Bryce's point, I think that there's so many other little things that, I mean, obviously you wouldn't necessarily want them on by default, but for as much, there have been times where I've lived with my headphones in, especially when I'm on the road. man, I would love to just have that little, like, you know, bing, Andrew, bing, Brian, bing, Bryce. And I just know that, oh, okay, that's the text message that's coming in. Or a phone call comes in and it's like, all from blank, blank, blank.
I
the phone call thing does happen.
I think that on the AR thing, like, I'm kind of in the mindset that, like, I've been working a lot doing some development for VR stuff, you know, and because, like, I've, you know, gone on this before, but, like, I think, you know, the Quest is the first of many new devices that radically changed that whole landscape, because we're going to get more and more of these standalone, completely wireless, self-contained things, and they're going to keep getting better and better, and then we're going to be, you know, 3-4 years from now, you know, that will be, VR will be kind of living up to the potential we thought it would. But I've been using my Oculus Go when I'm developing sometimes, and it's a neat thing just to be able to have. I got it right here. Pop this thing on. I got my little Vive mod strap and everything modded. But like, oh, yeah, this is really cool, because sometimes you're doing stuff in VR space. It's easier for me to go do it in there. Mm-hmm. You get those things down to super lightweight glasses that you just keep, you know, around. Like, oh, yeah, let me go do this. Pop those things on. And with, you know, and even just thinking in VR, but with AR, like, I can see, I don't see me wanting to spend 3 hours working in AR when a keyboard and a screen are perfectly useful and a phone is, but a lot of times it would be useful and it would be neat. You know, we've talked about this before on last one, I think, about how, like, you know, these AR things look cool, but then you feel dumb holding your phone up trying to use a tape measure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. Somebody mentioned Google Glass. The Google Glass that was initially demoed in that video, I'd be very excited for.
And that wasn't
got.
But that wasn't augmented reality. That was just
heads up.
That was a HUD. Yeah.
You know, that was the problem with Google Glass, was that you think what we thought it was going to be was, one, it's not. And you're looking at that, when you watch that video, like Justin's pointed out, you think it's just filling up your whole field of view. And you put the thing on, and then you see in this upper little corner there, you're like, I might as well just have my phone out and look down there, and it's the same amount of space, and it's not moving with your environment. You know, we were hoping that we're going to get, like, the Magic Leap level promise, but then we
feel like, you know, hey, guess what? This corpse has been cold for 3 years, and we're still kicking it with our boots.
Oh, way more than 3 years.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's doing really well in industry, and I'm like, I keep hearing that. I'm like, well, yeah. Sure. It is an example of, like, hey, there's a we want this. Well, this is what it is. Well, no, we want that, and that will be cool.
I think that the testament to Google Glass is that we do want it.
Yeah.
Like, we do want that thing. Like, all that stuff that's in that demo, like, if that comes out, like, tomorrow, that Apple, you know, maybe it's not for immediate release, but, like, coming in the next year or so are these AR glasses, I would be excited for them, because there is a lot that I enjoy having on the watch, you know, and if I could move my watch to my face, that would be better. I would like that.
Yeah, there's some really, really cool, like, let me see if I go to displayland.com, I think it is. Yeah, if you go there, you check out kind of really cool stuff that's going on in this sort of augmented reality space. And they have, I've seen these examples of, you pull out your phone, you spin it around, it maps your entire room, kind of thing. Hmm. And it's not a lot of information on their site. You don't see a lot of stuff on there, but they have, like, these different videos and stuff of showing, like, really cool phone room mapping, all this. It's just taking out your phone, taking photos, and there's going to be a lot of cool things that can happen, but we just need a way to interact with them.
Yeah. And look, there's going to be a lot that, is going to be figured out as we put all this kind of stuff together, because that was ultimately the problem with Google Glass as a product. Was the best thing about it was the camera. Like, it had a really good camera, had a really good video camera on it. And that ultimately became the problem, because a lot of people just don't want, without consent, them to be had their picture taken or their video taken. And so anything going forward is going to almost exclusively have to be something that you are experiencing that does not harm the world. And also, they're going to need to be like, I'm going to need them in, like, those blue blockers, like, because they need to look like regular ass glasses, or else I'm going to get robbed.
I had that thought the other day. I wondered if anybody has produced a phone where the camera was not on the back, but instead on the edge. The idea being, the moment you see anybody doing this, you know you're being photographed, you know you're being recorded. But if you see somebody, you know, with their phone level, then you don't think twice about it. And it seems to me like there's a number of situations that would be very helpful. Although then it occurred to me that you could probably attach a little mirror to just do a little side.
Somebody sold those attachments, you know, and there's your spy phone. But there's been attachments for the iPhone that you can just put under there that lets you sort of pick photos forward, which, you know, whatever weirdo reasons you have.
I mean, I was thinking in terms of like monitoring law enforcement, or I mean, there's times that like if you're going into a dangerous area or you suspect that somebody might get physical if they know they're being recorded, then that seems like that would be a good protection.
You know what I think would be cool would be like, because right now, like, you know, the drone market has been kind of collapsing because it turns out like there are way more drone companies than people that had active daily uses for drones and stuff. But we'll see a resurgence though again, because you're gonna get somebody's gonna come out in a couple of years like the property drone for you, Brian, and it's gonna be this drone that's gonna have the station charged and go up and patrol and come back and patrol and things like that'll be cool. But I like the idea of the drone that you're gonna go into that situation, the drone that just follows you around like in Blade Runner 2049, like, ah, let's go get Brian. We see the drone hovering with the cameras and stuff, and like, ah, he's got his robo guard drone.
There was a selfie drone, man, it must have been like 5 or 6 years ago, I think, but it was basically a bracelet, and what you did is you plucked it off and you put it in your hand, you tossed it up, and it just zoomed out 3 feet away, snapped a photo of you, and then landed back in your hand, and then you put it back on as a bracelet. I think it was one of those proof of concepts that has a ways to go. I thought that was a pretty cool idea.
Yeah, we've had a couple of those. We're like, oh, you know, like drones have now finally got good at following you, but there were a number of like Kickstarter ones, other ones that were sold, like, and it will follow you. And they were horrible at following you. But yeah, there are, but that keeps advancing. And it's like we're saying, we brought Google Glasses. Ah, we laughed at this, you know, because it didn't work. Ah, and then a couple years later, like, well, yeah, they work now, you know, and now it's cool. And it does.
Which is sort of what we went through with VR. Like there substantially wasn't a big difference in technology between, you know, 20 years ago with virtuality and what we got today. It's just a matter of everything got miniaturized and the processing power got better.
Yeah, in VR was, yeah, with mobile phones, that was just pushing down the cost of display technology and stuff, and it was just these innovations. So yeah, exciting world. Picks.
Man, I'm doubling down on Righteous Gemstones. It just gets better and better. I'm really digging it. It's a little bit in the weeds by episode 4, but I'm still having such a good time. I can't get enough.
How about Walter Goggins?
Walton Goggins. Yeah, he's good. He's
kind of got a weird character in this.
Yeah, things. Well, he's not necessarily likable, and he seems to be a specific parody of Billy Graham in the way that the others are just sort of general parodies of archetypes, you know. Mm-hmm. So I love Walton Goggins. I'm glad he's in it. I look forward to him becoming more interesting, because right now he's not very interesting.
What are you saying? Is it Billy Graham? He's like a very Jim Baker looking guy, though.
With the white hair and the tinted glasses and all that. I thought mm-hmm. all of that was classic Billy Graham.
Well, look at Jim. Look at Jim Backer too, and you see that like there was the televangelist.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's him.
That's him now. Yeah, back in the day. I wonder if it was people, you know, trying to look like Billy Graham, but there was a number of people that kind of had that look.
Yeah.
Oh, I think that was a well trafficked look in the heyday of televangelism, just the big blowout, you know, back white hair with some kind of gigantic chunky glasses kind of look. That seems to definitely fit. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I am continually tickled by the idea that there is an awesome show in this world, because I do think that it's so rich. Last night's episode I enjoyed, because it gives kind of Kelvin a little bit more to do, instead of just being like a prop in the larger kind of drama. But
I did like how cool they made Satanism. Like, Satanism, like, man, I want to party with those guys.
Lucifer, Lucifer.
I watched 15 minutes and I had to go to sleep, but yeah, that was like first, and I'm finally like Keefe to start getting his own.
Well, I hate that it's 30 minutes. It's too short. That first one being an hour long, that was just the right length for it. These new ones being 30 minutes.
I didn't even notice
are too
that
short.
They were different lengths. Wow, that's crazy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The first one is like a double size.
Got it.
By the way, renewed for season two today. That was the news. Gemstones is
well
renewed.
Well earned.
It's weird because it's running back to back with Succession, which like
is like a serious version of the same thing.
It's like Northern opulence in media versus Southern opulence in, you know, professional church going. But it's another overbearing father, two sons and a daughter. And they're very different shows, but there are moments where you're like, wow, like you could probably just take some of these plots and just copy paste them like into the other show and they would play. You know, you could do a blackmail story on Succession the same way that you could do without spoiling other stuff, you know, that you could do similar stuff on Righteous Gemstones. But tonally, they are very, very different. But my pick will be Succession because I finally started getting caught up on the second season there. And man, if you like that kind of show where a bunch of blustery people are being blustery to each other, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I think this was my pick last week. Succession was. I really have dug into it and am really enjoying it. It's very good. I don't know, something about the family drama and all the power playing. It's obviously like a little hammy, but it's cool. This last episode last night, like the thing that she does at the table, is like such a weird small thing, and she thinks, especially at the time, that it's not a big deal. But you know, everything after it's like, oh, you kind of really messed up with that one thing.
Yeah,
which is
it's a show about rich people behaving badly that doesn't hate its characters. It wants you to at least see an element of humanity in its characters. And that was initially part of the reason why I didn't give it a shot, because knowing that it was a Will Ferrell and Adam McKay produced project, when they are at their best, they understand that they need to give you humanity and characters that you probably shouldn't like. When they're at their worst, they don't. And thankfully, this is fairly clearly a Jesse Armstrong is the showrunner here, and this is his big thing, and he very much believes like, hey, look, you should just at least know that they're in pain, even if you think that they're kind of gross.
I got a kind of a weird pick. I was talking to my parents the other day, and I was mentioning to my mom about Apollo 11 because it's on Hulu now, and that's all, you know, original footage from the Apollo 11 launch. And she was mentioning this documentary to me that she had gotten on Amazon Prime called They Shall Not Grow Old, which was from last year from Peter Jackson. And it's about it's about the English ground forces.
In World War II. Oh,
World War II?
No, I thought it was World War I because it was extraordinary that they colorized everything. And
yes. Sorry. So that's the big deal is they went and colorized all this old footage. Did all this, you know, stabilization and tricks to, you know, properly treat all the images because, you know, at the time it was hand cranks and there was no sound. So they go through a lot of effort to not just colorize a lot of the footage, but like redub the footage with like lip readers and like actually give sound effects and environmental noise.
Wow,
and dialogue.
That really does come alive. That looks amazing.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a ghostiness to it in some of the shots because the stabilization is so strong or the frame rate was too fast or too slow at the time. But it's kind of interesting. And the way that they frame it is it's not a, you know, this battle and this location and this, you know, it's not kind of a timeline at all of the war. It's very, kind of agnostic about that, right? It's like, here's how all of us felt when, you know, we were all lying about our age to join the war. And then here's us going through boot camp and then us on the ground and digging trenches and the different machinery. And then
how crazy, because of course there's no living person to tell that story. We only have anecdotes and what got written down and letters. And
what's really interesting, so part of this is that they only used footage that I guess one of these archival organizations had put together. So they use voices from hundreds of these interviews that they made with survivors of World War One, but because they just cut around and around and around, so they don't like credit them until the very end because it's tons of them. It's you couldn't follow them because there's so many. But it creates this really interesting immersive element because it's like you're there. You really get their feelings and the I don't know, the emotion of going to war as a kid, basically. And you don't get caught up in this battle, this war, this turning point, X, Y, and Z. It's a really interesting take on it.
That's crazy. And it's called They Shall Not Grow Old.
They Shall Not Grow Old. Yeah. I don't think it's streaming anywhere, but you can buy it on Amazon.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It is it is a weird feeling because it's a war that still feels recent enough because we can have grandparents or somebody who we knew who was touched by it or, you know, to that effect. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the idea that the last veteran of that war died a few years ago and, you know, the concurrent thing was to read about like in the early part of the 20th century. And I think we'd played a clip once was people who had met Abraham Lincoln, you know, when we'd hear about like, you'd be watched like, you know, Who Do You Trust or something like this. Oh, I was at the theater and Abraham Lincoln, like, whoa, like, cause yeah, you watched this on TV.
I think it was on in the 1950s, like What's My Line or something.
Yeah.
I've got a secret. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that was sort of, and then like you had like, you know, the oldest, you know, can, you know, Civil War soldier, and we talked about this before, like how you had children of them. Like there was the last child, like the son or daughter of a Civil War soldier, like maybe I still like passed away real recently because you had like these Civil War veterans who would be in their 90s and marry and then, you know, have children beneficiaries, but you have grandchildren. There are still grandchildren of Civil War soldiers.
Well, I think we covered it on Weird Things like 4 years ago that the United States government stopped sending out checks to the children or the child of a Confederate soldier. So this was somebody who fought for the Confederacy, but then was a veteran. Because that's the way it works. Mm-hmm. Once everything was reunified, and he married in the 1920s somebody much much younger, and she was still alive at the beginning of the 21st century, and the last check got written.
Wow.
Yeah. Incredible. No. This is isn't that extraordinary?
Wow. Now that's easy money.
But it's one of those things that really puts into perspective how short America's history is compared to histories of almost any other country.
Nothing was more jarring than when I went to Scotland and we're in like Edinburgh and there's like literally there's just like just not even the impressive stuff. Like here's a post. It's older than your country. Before America
it's been getting peed on by dogs and humans alike longer than the United States has existed.
Welcome to the pee post, established in 1773.
Test it for Loch Ness Monster DNA. Maybe that's right.
There was in like Japan, they have like the longest running hotel has been continuously running for like 1,000 years.
Wow. Oh,
I mean, it probably had some upgrades, I would imagine. But yeah, it's crazy. So, here we got it. I was wrong. It's been around for 1,300 years. So, my pick, I mentioned this before. I've been using my Oculus Go a lot, like sitting in bed late at night when I don't want to turn on the TV and wake somebody else up, you know, because it is a great, you know, they came out like, it's VR. And then like, well, maybe it's more of a media consumption device. Like, well, that's a step down from VR. But actually, I surf the web. I mean, I love my Quest, my Oculus Quest, I love. But if I just want to sit in one spot and I want to read on websites or stuff late at night, or, you know, you can watch Netflix on here or whatever. But like I do a lot of kind of my late night computing or watching and stuff now inside this. So you can get an Oculus Go. They're like $199 now. I think if you're into VR, you just go up. And if you want standalone, go do Quest. If you want a desktop, Brian and Justin can make recommendations there. But for a $200 device, and now I'm like, next trip I go on, like, if I'm not afraid of looking stupid on the airplane, I might bring it because it really is a nice little self-contained environment.
All right. That's the challenge.
next time you're on a flight, Andrew, we're gonna see if you can do the Andrew VR challenge and whether you can weather looking like the guy who's wearing VR on a plane. Because I'm actually with you. I think it'd be dope. It'd be awesome because, like, as cool as having like you know, the now all the airlines are doing their own like server on the plane itself, so you can just like stream movies. But at the end of the day, unless you've got a little thing that you can like prop it up on, it's a lot of you just sort of like holding out your phone. VR headset would be pretty dope.
Yeah,
be pretty good.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things you see other people doing it. You're like, oh, really? Really? And but it was like AirPods, you know? You're like, oh, God. And then you're like, oh,
I mean, of all the environments, we're already accustomed to people putting sleep masks over their face. So I'm surprised that any of you guys would have any hesitation.
No, because it's different. Come on, that's not a sleep mask.
Yeah, sure, it's the mouth open, the mouth agape look that I think might be... He's having so much fun.
Excuse me, sir. Would you like a soft drink?
Pretzels.
Water? Pretzels?
Pretzels.
Who said that? So, Brian, you would have no hesitation.
Oh, yeah. Hello, my name is Brian Brushwood. I sit down and pout when the TSA makes me wait. Do you think I'm going to have any hesitation?
What? You know, it's funny because, like, I go to check out and have my AirPods in, and I still get these looks from cashiers, which is why I shop on Amazon now. Really? You have your AirPods in, and I'm like, yeah, I've been in line for 8 minutes, and we weren't having a conversation. So, yeah, my AirPods are in my ear right now because I don't need to take them out to say, one plastic bag, please.
See, so, I do that. They do shame me because I'll wear them at the grocery store, and then I'll get up in line, and I pull it out real quick so that –
Yeah, I do the pull it out because I get the pouty look from them, but it's I'm like, my response is like, really, you weren't talking to me when I was further on in the line, and now here you don't care who I am. I'm like a super friendly, nice guy. If I'm talking to you and engaged in you, music's not playing. I just don't want to take them out of my friggin' ear, you know. But it's just that's
this guy. I think it's bad apples. I mean, we're the good guys, Andrew, but.
Sure.
By the way, Captain Fubar in the chat said the exact thought I had, which is imagine if you, as you're on the plane, much like they have those roller coasters where you wear VR helmets so you get a space-themed experience or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like imagine you're in a classic biplane or you're in a rocket ship or maybe the Vista below you. They could even have like a live 360 camera down below. So it's like you're on a glass-bottom plane.
That'd be
like
cool.
You just typed in like, all right, I'm going from SFO to Austin, and now it'll just like play as, you know, like, all right, go. And now I'm just looking at the glass bottom of
It also keep in mind, like those flight trackers, they're down to the exact mile of, at any given time from the transponder. Mm-hmm. So that all that live data isn't too much data. It seems like that could go over Wi-Fi. So you could get a real-time accurate, you know, glass bottom plane.
I got my goggles on here. I'm going to click over to the airplane function. All right, let's go like, oh, do I want a 360 view of where I am now? Sure.
I'm so high. Why did I do this? Oh, my fear of high.
It must be a pretty straightforward roller coaster.
Plus, also, think about the AR aspects of that, where it's like it tells you all of the, maybe there's a, like a social network where you tag interesting things to see, and then that goes in the databases. So it's like maybe there'd be like a weird thing stuff where like every time
Google
somebody's like,
of things?
Sure, but specifically stuff that is uniquely interesting to look at from up above. Like it's like it becomes a tour guide where it's like, hey man, in 2 minutes you're gonna see this really rare thing over here, and then also. And I guess Google Maps would solve it, but there are so many things that when you're looking out the plane that you're like, what is that? And it's like those answers can all be available.
Yeah, that'd be neat. Yeah. We see a river. What river is that? What town is that?
Everybody's saying like, oh, some maps of Google Earth. No, curated for only the interesting stuff, not everything. No, point out the interesting stuff.
Why do you need a computer on your phone? I already have a computer and phone.
Yeah, I think expanding Brian's idea is the idea that imagine you look at it and the crosshair where you hit tells you what you're looking at instead of like, Because you sometimes you, I've done that. Right, I've done airplane trips. I pulled Google Maps. I'm like, yeah, I didn't know this city was over here. I'm like, where is it? Whatever. And I think this was like 20 minutes before we landed. I think it's here. Whatever. Yeah, it would be cool. Just point and look and zoom in real time satellite data, see stuff. Oh, is that a swimming pool? What's like, going on there?
Like on the way into Austin, if you come through Houston, there's somebody has cleared 5 full acres and cut down all the trees in order to spell like a 5-letter word that's only visible to planes and like that kind of stuff.
Is it a naughty word?
No, I don't remember the word. I think it's the family name. That's why it's not stuck in my memory.
The hells.
The hells. The dams. the hate planes. The go away aliens.
Yeah, my name is George Frick, and this is Martha Frick, and we're the little Georgie and Petunia Frick, our kids.
Well, you know, we talk about like what happens with more cameras and things like that. And one of the things that does get interesting, though, is like the idea if you put on your headset and you start, when you start putting up thousands of satellites and, you know, micro CubeSats and low Earth orbit with Earth mapping and stuff, and you're like, oh, I'm standing out on my property. What does it look like right now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like, oh, there I am, you know, and being able to see that and be able to do that kind of real time stuff would be cool. Because, you know, well, we're heading there. A lot of stuff we see on Google Earth, you know, that's it's airplane photography. We call it satellite stuff, but a lot of it's airplane photography, the closer detailed stuff. But
well, you know what this reminds me of? Back at E3 a few months ago, Microsoft announced they're making another flight simulator. And it looks really nice. They use a ton of like high resolution footage.
Do they still prohibit you from flying into buildings?
Well, we don't quite know that one. But they've got like real 3D.
Wow, you know, it really does look extraordinary. Yeah. I bet in VR, that's next level. That's full on. You could learn how to fly a plane like that.
Yeah. Cool. Well, gentlemen, it's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.